two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back. This is the Just Okay Sports Podcast. That is Just Oklahoma Sports Podcast, and it's a very average podcast as well. I am one of your village idiots, Daryl. I am here with my brother, Jared. And don't forget, if you do like what you hear or are just somewhat mildly entertained by our ignorance, then please like, subscribe, hit that follow button, and come along for the ride. Should be good. Jared, how are you, sir?
If they're happy with your ignorance and my absolute amazing knowledge of every facet of every game that's ever played.
Yes, that is correct.
I know it doesn't roll off the tongue as well, but I just don't want to put myself in the same category is all I'm saying. So anyway,
I think that's very fair.
Yeah. No, it's been a good, we're getting the floor, except Florida winter weather is here. It's rained literally like every day since the UCF game when I was literally soaked. So it's like kind of not really, it kind of sucks. Cause like, I guess like, you know, up until now, it's like every time I've lived here, like everything's really, it's always really nice out. You can do whatever you want. And like now it's like, you kind of have to stay indoors because it's like misting or raining all day long.
Rain just kind of, unless it's just like scolding hot outside and rains and you can kind of go outside and try and do something stupid in it. But rain just kind of ruins it all.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. So, I was actually this day I had to go help my neighbor. She got her car stuck. She tried to pull in the driveway and like they have like a pretty good lip. So anyway, she drove it off in the grass and I guess it's just like a really muddy spot. And she did it like, I don't know how she did it, but this thing was like buried, like the bumper was on the driveway and the wheel was like down in the grass. I was like, you have done an amazing job. And she was all crying and I was like, look, like, aww. I'll help you out. Like, she didn't want to call a wrecker because she was embarrassed. And, you know, and I was like, look, I'll help you out. So, by the way, I'm proud of myself. I actually figured out a way to tie a tow strap to my Mercedes and pull her out. So, yeah, it's been a weird day. This is just Florida thing. So,
He's single. He is single.
I am single.
He has a Mercedes.
Single.
He saves old women that have driven their car into the driveway.
Well, she's a college student, but yeah, we'll go with old.
You said older lady neighbor.
No.
So she got her car stuck on purpose so you could come and rescue her.
Yeah, I don't think her boyfriend was there, but he's not a
hey. He should have put a ring on.
He's one of those people like, let me put it this way. I put the tow strap on, even though I wasn't actually like hauling anything. I still like as like the dad in me or whatever, even though I don't have kids. Like, I did it, and then, like, I pulled it. I was like, that ain't going anywhere. Like, you have to, but, like, he's not the guy to do it. That's just all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it at that. Nice enough guy. But, you know, he was kind of, he's like those that guy that you wouldn't want to bet him to spell cat, even if you spotted him the A and the T. So, anyway.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
So, she's just dating him. He's just the bimbo that she's dating.
Yeah, there could be reasons. I'm going to try to keep it PG. There may be reasons why. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. But, yeah, I don't know. But, no, I think everything's good. Good here in Florida.
Oh, man. This podcast is going to a place that no one was anticipating as we kicked off today.
Yeah, it's a great time to be alive, though. But, hey, you know what's great, though? It's amazing. The conference we're in currently, they don't know what they're doing. They're having a hell of a week. They're having a hell of a month. So let's like for the people at home, I don't know how, if you're a football fan, you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a pretty avid football fan. So I don't know how you wouldn't have heard this, but beginning of the year, they came out with tiebreaker rules, which were a little convoluted, but they seemed, you know, I don't know. It's weird. I started thinking about this today. you kind of had this mentality that it's like, it's convoluted and there's a lot of rules and a lot of like this weird math, you know, and things like that nature. But you assume that the conference that wrote it has thought this through, right? Like that's what, if we arrive at this situation, it's going to be handled. Like there's not going to be confusion, whatever. Why we thought that, I don't know, because the conference is clearly shown to be a bunch of idiots. They already had the co-champions where we had like, was it like four co-champions that one year? That was stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they had these rules set. For those that don't know, I guess there were some questions asked, but I don't know. If I from what I understood, there was a couple ADs that were asking for clarification. The Big 12 made a statement, said these are the rules. Then, literally, I think it was Monday, they came out, Monday evening, Monday night, was it? Or maybe it was yesterday. Came out with another clarification and said something totally different. And now they've come out with another statement and they basically tried to double down on the previous rules while adding a whole nother paragraph. So I'm going to read the statement. Are you okay with that? I'm going to read the statement.
Yeah.
The tiebreaker regarding the Big 12 tiebreaker, step one of multi-team ties and conference tiebreaker procedure. In event of a multiple team tie, head-to-head wins takes precedence. If all the tied teams are not common opponents, the tied team that defeated each of the other tied teams earns championship berth. There have been no changes to any rules regarding the Big 12 football tiebreaker procedures, which were agreed upon prior to the season and went into effect August of 2023. There was a whole sentence added there at the end. I don't really know. It's a weird thing. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Because like I feel... Well, give me what you think. Give me what you think. I want to hear your thoughts.
I mean, honestly, I think that this is what they agreed upon, but whoever they hired to write it out and explain it just did a really poor job. And obviously, let's just put it this way. The person they hired to it did a poor job because they never played a sport in their life. They're really good at English. That's why they write things like this for websites and didn't even process the reality that you could have five teams that are tied for second place. Well, if one team beat four of the other teams, then that team should be getting into the championship.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's just really poorly written. Right. And
well, it's funny to me because I feel like it's one of those, it shows the snap reaction of the Big 12 trying to justify why it's doing what it's doing is how I feel about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do think there's a little bit of that, right? As far as, oh man, if this ends the way it is right now, Oklahoma State would go to the championship game, right? And Texas would go, and here's the reasons why. Well, it's because of the head-to-head, right? Oklahoma State's beaten this team, and they've beaten this team. But the way we wrote it doesn't make it seem like that's how it should work. So now we have to clear. And that's the thing. Like they said, here's our rules, and they're right. And then all of a sudden everybody went, okay, well, based on what you just read us, that means that you're going to go to this because you have three teams tied. And they're like, oh, no, that's not, you know, I mean, it's just.
I mean, look,
it's like, just terrible.
Here's my thought process on this, because I think this is systemic problem with the Big 12.
Yeah,
maybe it's systematic. I don't know. The words interchange in my head. But. The problem is like, think about how long let's really break this down historically. The reason OU and Texas were leaving the Big 12, or a big reason, was the slow reaction process of the Big 12. We'd been asking for well over a decade for them to add teams, right? Nothing happened,
yeah.
You know?
Right.
And the whole time the Big 12's melt, let's be honest, whether you hate, you know, whether you're an OSU fan or whoever, Oklahoma and Texas are bringing in the most money. You can't even argue against that.
No.
And so they were milking the OU and Texas, and OU and Texas finally said, you know what? We're done. We're tired of waiting, because we kept getting told, well, maybe later. We'll reconsider. I don't even remember. What was that? Bowlesby. Bowlesby all the time. Well, we'll reconsider next year. There's ongoing discussions, and that's all we heard for literally over a decade. OU and Texas leave. A change in leadership is made, and then all of a sudden, immediately you add what, six teams total now? I don't even know, 8, 9, 10. I don't even know how many teams they're freaking adding anymore, including the ones that are coming from the Pac-12. So that all happened extremely quick. And then now you have stuff like this where it's like they're so quick to try to justify things that now it's like, honestly, like I saw somebody that made the point. It's like they've basically opened themselves up for a lawsuit. So like think of a team like it, well, any team, right? Whatever team gets left out. Let's say that there's basically three legitimate teams that are vying for the tie, right?
Yeah.
And that team gets left out. Their institution can say, well, according to the rules, you said that one day when you made a public statement, you know, so it's one of those things that this is the things that the Big 12, if they're going to survive and they're going to try to be a big boy program and they're going to try to go with the big, right now, it's going to be the Big 10 and the SEC are going to be the big dogs really on the block.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to start sorting this stuff out. Like you've got to start being clear. I understand a lawyer or whoever wrote this, but those sorts of things are just, and again, it just feeds the fuel. It fuels the fire of the conspiracy of they're trying to screw OU. They're trying to screw Texas.
Yeah.
It's just, again, this is the Big 12 we know that they will not get out of their own way. And that's pretty much my take on it. It's just.
Yeah. It's just but that's the thing too, right? This is, I don't disagree with anything that you said. At the same time, like, from a logical standpoint, what they're saying here makes sense. It completely makes sense, right? Okay. Like this one, like as of right now, there are three teams tied for this one spot, and the one team has beaten the other two teams. That team should go through. We all agree with that. Like, that's the thing. But because you live in a world now where everybody can get on Twitter and run their thumbs, right? Like, well, then now that's when you got all the conspiracy talk going out and they're just trying this. And it's like, guys, like what their clarification, which is a terrible move. And it shows that they didn't think this through well, that they didn't lead well. And all those things are true. But like, when you actually read it, it's like, yes, that's correct. That's what all of us would want if we were in the same position. But like you said, if it does come to a 3 or 4 team tie and there's a team that on the head-to-head end, it doesn't work out for them, but the way it was written, it would have worked out for them. We'll see what happens, you know? Yeah. Like,
Again, it's just one of those things of not thinking ahead, I guess would be a good word. Like, it's they're making, instead of trying to look 4 or 5 moves ahead every time they do something, they're just doing, this makes sense right now, and then not really analyzing how that affects a future branch of what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of conspiracies, did you watch BV's press conference?
I watched, yeah, I did. I got a chance to take a glance at that.
So I did. He did get asked actually about the conspiracy theory about the refs trying to job OU or whatever. And he said, I'm not going to give my guys an out on that. Like, you got to play, you got to control. Basically, I mean, in a little bit longer words, I feel like he just said, you got to control what you can control. I really don't even think that 100%. He denied. I don't think he really denied that he doesn't think. I mean, he said, I don't believe in conspiracies. But in the same way, the way it worded to me, it kind of felt like he was not really saying like the Big 12 is really not helping us any either. Right.
Right. But I mean, I think like, oh, you would hope most coaches and fans are different than coaches, right? Coaches would say, execute your job. And even if they job you, you're still going to come out on top. You know, like I think of a perfect example. We, in high school one time, we're playing our arch rival McAllister, and I was not playing yet at this time because I was too small, too slow, too weak, and all the different things. And we had a really great team. But I mean, we're there playing. Brandon Daniels breaks a huge run for a touchdown. I mean, it's beautiful. Nothing wrong. And all of a sudden you see this flag, like Brandon's probably 30 yards down the field and you see a ref drop a flag 30 yards down the field. And now the flag comes out at the offensive line and it's a holding call. So they pull the call back. Right. And very next play, we run a different play with Brandon, takes it to the house. Same thing, same ref, 30, 40 yards down the field. Then the flag comes out at the offensive line, holding again. It's like, okay, bro. Third play, we bust another one. He runs the third one of the house. And guess what? The flag doesn't come out this time, right? Like, it's kind of like, okay, man.
Okay,
like,
but we do so, have to, we do have to say, I do have to admit, the teams that you were on were heads and tails above most of the teams they played. So,
yeah. I mean, McAllister was good that year, but yes, I mean, especially, yeah, my junior year team was stupid. I mean, it was, the current Carl Albert school is too, it's got too much, but like we were that kind of talented in the class that particular year. And so, yeah, I mean, it was crazy, but all that to say, like, if you do your jobs, even the holding penalties, right?
Mm.
Quote unquote, you can overcome. We know that that's not totally the reality, but no, BV is not going to get up there and go, oh, absolutely, we're getting screwed. Like, what good does
that
do?
Yeah,
no.
I mean, if he did that, then that's, then people are going to be screaming, well, it's, he's trying to blame, you know, give away out and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting that it was asked. But I mean, I did like his response. I just thought that it was a little funny just because I guess the point I'm trying to make is I feel like you could still see a little bit of frustration in his body language and his tone when he says that I do think he understands that there's calls that should have gone their way that didn't, but you know, whatever. But no,
yeah,
I thought
it
was
is what it is.
I actually thought it was a really good press conference though. I liked what he said. You know, he gave a lot of praise to Sawchuk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he really was a good press conference. I was actually almost glad because I like a happy BV more than I like a, I'm going to say not defensive, but you know, like the more like
last week he was chippy.
Yeah.
He was chippy last week, but I mean, I don't know. It's kind of that both and, right? Like, I kind of liked the feistiness of BV last week. It wasn't his kind of cheesy, giggly, you know, no little punches or jokes for the media. I mean, he walked in, was like, here's the stats. What do you want to know? And he was just like, we suck. Like, that's all I can tell you. Like, and I ain't got answers for it other than we've played like crap. You know, like, I kind of liked, liked
it
the
was
feisty version of him.
You know, and like I said, it's, I know there was a lot of guys. I don't remember who it was that asked the question at the beginning that I thought this is one thing that I hate about watching the press conferences. There's always some absurdly stupid question asked to where you're just like, why ask this question? And it was like the first one that they showed. Hey, coach, you know, there's a lot of coaches getting fired this week. You ever think about getting fired is basically how it was. And I was like, what? You know what I mean?
Well, like, the question they were trying to ask without asking, what conversations do you have about Jeff Lebby before he's a head coach?
This was before that. This was the opening question because they asked him specifically, Jimbo got fired. The Mississippi State coach got fired. Do you ever think about like you getting fired? Does that ever cross your mind? This is how that was worded.
Wow. I must have come in late on the press conference.
Yeah. And then later they asked him about the assistants. Like, cause then they said later you have assistants that, you know, maybe you're getting offers for coordinator positions or head coaching positions. And that's when he answered that. But like somebody opened, and I was like, but again, what a stupid question. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little too much. The question that got my attention more, okay, because we saw a hard left turn by the staff. And I don't really know what to make of it, but if you remember back in fall camp, Jeff Lebby in an interview said something to the effect of, we're excited that, you know, Dylan has an opportunity to be a top 10 passer all time in college football in his final season. And he said that unprovoked, right? And then they kind of pressed into it a little bit and he said, yeah, his last season. DG was asked some other question. He said something about the fact, you know, it's my last go round, and which everybody kind of took notice of because it was, again, it was unprovoked. And then BV was asked about it and was basically and said, yes, this is Dylan's last year here. And then yesterday was asked about that and was like, we haven't had that conversation. I'm like, wait, what? Like,
yeah, I mean,
and I don't know if he just didn't. It could have very well been he just didn't know how to approach that topic and wasn't expecting it to be asked.
I mean, that
and just I don't know.
And that's where I come in. And I'm thinking that's maybe somebody reading a little too much into it. I agree with what you're saying, but I also think we're getting to that point in the season where I don't think that he wants to come out and say, yeah, Dylan's already said he's leaving. Right. Like,
but you did before the season ever started.
I know, but I'm just saying you're getting into quote unquote championship November. You're trying to get to the, you know, to the conference championship, all those things. I think he's just trying to keep the media focused on what's going on or whatever. DG's probably gone. But I think maybe he's just trying to give that where maybe DG has his platform that he wants to announce I'm leaving or staying or whatever he's doing. Right. So yeah, I mean, I do agree with you. It's one of those things that was handled a little weird, I guess. I don't know how to just like, yeah. It does feel. Yeah. But it's the same thing.
It was very much a 180 from the beginning. And that's my thing is like, y'all are all saying this as though you're on the same page. And then your answer is we've never discussed it. And it's like, well, DG said last year, Lebby said last year, you said last year. Now that, and then like, and here's the other side of that is like, I mean, we say DG's probably gone, but like, when's he getting drafted?
Yeah. I mean,
you know what I'm saying? So like when you start to process, he's maybe I would think he's a very late round pick at best, right? Why wouldn't you stay with the NIL deal he has and play another year, which I'm not totally against that per se, but I'm kind of ready to move on to the Jackson Arnold life next year. Now, granted, it's the first year in the SEC, so maybe they have the mentality that he's not ready to lead.
The sales pitch could be, look, you go beat up on SEC teams that are known for their tough defenses, and then all of a sudden your draft stock is worth more. Right. I mean, there's probably going to be a lot that I think that maybe that decision isn't finalized. I think everybody has to remember they're college kids. I understand that now they operate like businesses more than college students a lot of times. Because like I've seen people like Danny Stetson's coming back for sure. And I'm like, nobody knows that. Danny doesn't know that. No. Danny's one of the top linebackers in the nation right now.
Right.
So I could easily see him leaving. And they're like, well, he said, you know, I want to play in the SEC next year. Okay, he can say he wants to. But I've heard him say, well, I want the guys to be ready for the SEC. Or like he's hinted that this is his last season or whatever. I don't think he knows. I mean, I've heard him say it both ways. So it's kind of one of those things that I think when it comes down to the player themselves, I think it's one of those things that's they kind of have to wait and see. Because it's like if it's the same for think of.
My question. I'm with you on that part. Right. But again, BB left it open, said we haven't had the conversation.
Right.
If DG walks in his office at the end of the season and says, I want to come back. I want my COVID year. If you're BB, do you want that? That's what I'm kind of like.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, part of me wants to say yes.
I can see both ends of it.
Right.
But I don't know either.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a whole weird, I mean, I think they're ready to get to Jackson Arnold. I know they redshirted him, which was also, I mean, a little bit weird. I mean, it makes sense, I guess, in some degree, because, you know, he could get hurt. It could be that, you know what I mean? It could take him longer to get to be as prolific as he should be. So it makes sense. I know people were trying to people were mad about it. And I was like, it hurts nothing to redshirt him. Right. Yeah. So whatever. But yeah, so I've seen people read into that because of some of that. Yeah, I mean, I think they're ready to move to Jackson Arnold. And I know people have been like, well, you still need depth. I'm like, I mean, you have guys coming in next year. I think that quarterback room is going to start getting crowded if DG stays. So I'd put that.
I agree. So you would say you can't.
I don't know. I don't want to be. That's not why they're paying me $5.5 million or whatever it is a year. So I don't know. I mean, and the thing is
it's a fascinating discussion.
If I have to pick who I think is going to be the better quarterback, I'm going Jackson Arnold. So if I come from that point of view, but again, this is where I can't answer because under Lincoln Riley, I think you might have been able to. Right, the whole relational, not transactional thing going on here. Because I think if Dylan has a good relationship with BV and Levy, which we think he does, and maybe he's the leader that we think he is, or whatever, those sorts of things, I think for BV, change that equation to things that we don't know, that we can't know. Right? You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Personally, I'm with you. I would probably say I want Jackson to be my guy. But anyway, yeah, whole weird deal. But I did, like I said, I just want to highlight real quick. BV's press conference was I felt a little bit more. It wasn't like fun, like bubbly, weird, you know, like pow, Boomer Sooner, all that, whatever. But it was still like it felt like a good BV. You know what I mean? Like he felt
good
like
vibes.
He wasn't,
yeah, there's good vibes in the room.
He wasn't just absolutely ticked off and not want to be there. But we got BYU coming up, so they asked some questions with that. But let's roll into BYU. Let's talk about them because they're a very interesting team, right? Like when you look at them statistically, it's like I honestly feel like West Virginia and BYU are two very similar teams in the sense of like I haven't got to watch a ton of film on BYU, I'll be honest. But when you look at them, it's like they're either really elite or they're really terrible. Like there's not a lot of in between for this team. Like they have flashes. And then there's times that it looks like they don't know what a football is. So, but they do have wins against Stanford, Arkansas, SMU, which is pretty impressive actually at this point.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati. So Stanford, not great. Arkansas, I think Arkansas is better than the record.
They're not doing well in the SEC. Let's reframe. They're doing terrible in the SEC. They're 1-6, right? In the SEC. So yikes, right? But still a solid, good Division I program. Yeah.
It's not a team that you're just going to steamroll.
I would still say they have more talent than BYU.
Yeah.
Right. Like SMU, we saw what happened with us with them. That's a tight game, right? Between us, Cincinnati, tight game between us. I mean,
and I think SMU's
beat two teams that gave us trouble. That's the way to kind of break those down.
Yeah, and Cincy, as much as people want to pile on Cincy, and I don't disagree that Cincy has gotten worse. I think they've gotten worse as the season's gone on. Cincy's still, I still think that they're a good team. I know everybody's going to be like, oh, he's just saying. No, I really think they're better. Again, Arkansas and Cincinnati and those in that list, I think, are better teams than the records would indicate.
I think that's a fair way to say it, right? Like, Cincinnati's not a good team, but, there's enough there that if they're clicking and you're bad, it could go really poorly for you, right?
Their
D-line is legitimately talented.
Yeah, I was going to say, their defense has really, if it wasn't for their defense, they may not have won a game all year. But anyways, but let's go on to BYU. So offensively, not much of a juggernaut. Points per game, 19.8 points per game. That's 110th in the nation. 3.2 yards per carry rushing. That's 109th. 6.2 yards per attempt. That's 128th. They have 8 interceptions and 4 fumbles given up. And they average 289.7 yards per game. That's 127th. So they're basically the Alex Grinch defensive offenses.
Dude, and again, when you read those numbers and then find out y'all beat Stanford, Arkansas, SMU, and Cincinnati, how did you beat those teams? I honestly, by the stats, do not know how they pulled that off, right? Now, at the same time, let's throw a name out there. Caden Slovis. Remember, that was a guy that OU fans were all fired up about. Right, trying to get here. Like Caleb's gone. We need Slovis. Remember, it was Slovis and Dart when it all started out. Those were the guys we needed and we had to have and all the different things. And
well, here's
I don't think it's a guy you want to let get hot.
Let me run you through some of their, like, I think high points and low points in their season. So, like, we've highlighted some of their wins, right? But, like, they started the season with Sam Houston, who was terrible. I don't even know if Sam Houston's won an FBS game this year. they only won 14-0 against a very terrible team. Right. You know, they piled it on Southern Utah. They did have a tight one with the Arkansas win was a tight one. Mm-hmm. Their loss to Kansas was pretty tight. Cincy, again, a tight win. It was a one-score game. Now, TCU is where, like, I feel like things started to kind of really fall off. The wheels started to fall off the wagon for them. TCU 44-11 is their
yeeks
by TCU, who's not a good TCU team this year. Right. Texas beat them 35-6, which they did hold. If I recall right, with the Texas game, they did hold on for a little bit, like for about half of that game, they were in it.
Yeah, right? I want to say halftime might have been 17-3 or something like that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were never like challenging, but they were in it. You know what I'm saying? Like they're clinging on.
Yep.
And then since then, it's like I said, 37-7 West Virginia, 45-13 Iowa State. So it's kind of like I feel like they've kind of just slid down hills, which I don't really know. We're just okay. So I don't have if somebody was nicked up then or wasn't 100%. Like I haven't followed BYU well enough. I've tried to look up things in preparation for this and I couldn't find a ton. All that to say, they do have some talent. Like I said, Kinsolf is, I think, actually a really good quarterback. I just think that that's the thing is when you look at their stats across their offense, like you can tell. And when I've watched the little bit I've got to watch of them, I'll tell you what, like I'll give you the, like my high points of their offense. And the number one guy outside of Slovis to me is Isaac Rex. They're tight end.
Mm-hmm.
29 receptions, 385 yards, 2 touchdowns. Now those aren't crazy numbers, but he's kind of one of those guys that I feel like gives you, that's like the tight end that gives you fits, like a Iowa State type tight end, right?
Yeah.
So I really like what he does. Chase Roberts has 38 receptions, 524 yards for 4 touchdowns. So you're not going to be able to just stack the box. I mean, they've got players, right? So you're going to have to cover. And then their running back, LJ Martin, 104 carries for 494 yards. But looking at his stats, he started to actually, it's funny enough, I say how badly they've been doing. Last few weeks, he's kind of started to pick up. His yards per carry, I think, against Iowa State was like 7.5, if I remember correct, per carry. That's so crazy. He was actually, yeah, like he actually did well. So I think he started to pick up there. Their offensive line, I think, is gelling. They're just not that good, if that makes sense. So,
yep.
But yeah, I mean, it's a very... a weird offense. Like I said, they're not very good. Statistically, they're probably the worst offense in college football. but I say all that to be said, one thing we haven't even talked about, it's BYU, right? You were at BYU.
Mm-hmm.
No, never know what happens. Crazy Mormons. You're in Mormon town, right? You never know what's going to happen out there in Utah. There's all kinds of weird stuff.
And by the way, for all the OU fans that are making the trip out there, I feel sorry for you because there will be no caffeine available in the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be
a 10 a.m. kickoff. That's rough.
Yeah. Even like, you know, I was actually hoping we'd get a night game. I was just hoping. But anyway, but I don't know. You still got to play defense, right? So give me two players for OU that you think could have it, like they're, that are going to need to have a good day Saturday to really shut down BYU.
Well, I'm with you. I think the guy that kind of gives Slovis some confidence and is that safety blanket for him is Rex, the tight end. So I think whoever's at Cheetah is most likely going to be who gets put in that position, right, to kind of deal with him. I'm sure they'll scheme some things up to get Kip or Stutzman, but in generally that nickel slash Cheetah position is what takes on there. They need to have a great game and just eliminate him from, you know, from the process. You know, if you can do that, I think it's there. So, I mean, they've been rotating a lot, especially last week more. I don't know if Dasan's back this week or not from injury. They put Sammy O in there last week, who had some good moments. And then Kendall Dolby, obviously. So, I'm sorry to, like, you've asked me for two and I'm giving you like three, but they're rotating those guys so much at that position. I think any of those guys that can get hot and get going there would be great. You know, I think after that, it's how do you not go with Danny Stutzman? You know, I mean, it's obvious that he brought a spark back to the defense and some leadership there. And as long as he's hitting his run fits and playing really strong and playing really well there, I mean, again, shut down that run game and see what they can do from there, right? It's already not a very good one. Don't give them any reason to believe they can get it going now. So those are probably my two guys defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I still don't think Danny's 100%, but he's very quickly become one of my favorite Sooners, not even because, just even with his on-field play. You could tell he wasn't 100%. You could tell that ankle was still bothering him, and he was playing as hard as anybody else on that field. Like you said, the defense looked miles better. They were able to adjust a lot quicker. It's just a different team with Stutzman on the field. So a little scared if that leadership doesn't get transferred, if he does leave. But so I guess my number one, I'll just go Danny Stutzman. I'll agree with you there. And then second, I think I'm gonna go with Bothroyd. And the reason being,
good call.
Regardless, like I said, the running back's starting to get a little warm. Their offensive line seems like it's getting a little bit of confidence to it. They're performing better. Still not great. But you need somebody like Bothroyd to really get in there, disrupt things. Like you said, he doesn't show up sometimes on the stat sheet, but there was times like, you know, last week that he's eaten up double teams and
he was everywhere. If you really watch the tape close last week, he is everywhere, just not getting a tackle, not getting
But he's opening pressures. The door. He's opening the door for Stutzman or whoever to come straight downhill and smack somebody or whatever. I think he was in on the play where Dolby just absolutely smashed Green, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
I think him just getting in there, being disruptive, I just want to see the defensive line as a whole. Like I said, that the whole unit be a little bit more aggressive. And like I said, I want to see them. This is a game. Let's assert some dominance. I want to see you just absolutely dominate this offensive line. And I think that's a big key. So speaking of keys, give me your overall. What do you think defensive wise, just as a team, what do you think OU's like, what's the keys for you to win this game? What's the key to a shutout? Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's going to be the run game, right? Like kind of a combination, run game, early downs, keep Slovis at third and long, right? Like make him very predictable where you can really tee off. And another guy too, that I think if he could build off his week from last week to this week, that could have a big game. I don't think he's necessarily he has to play good, but he could have a real day, is R. Mason Thomas. He really started to kind of show some flashes last week. And this is the kind of game, man, you get him in third and long. And if they're subbing guys out to bring in PJ and RMT on either side and just say, go, like, we're not twisting, we're not stunting. I need you to beat your guy one-on-one and go get the quarterback. Could be a lot of fun. So again, I think that's shutting down the run on those early runs is big. And then the thing that we've talked about in the losses, the defense has to continue to create turnovers. That's how you win the turnover battle. So create turnovers, make a way that you get the ball back. And if you can do that, obviously you're giving yourself extra stuff, you know, extra opportunities offensively, and you're quieting that crowd. And that crowd is going to want to come unhinged. Turnover, shut that down as quick as anything else does.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with you. I think that that's a big part of it. I think you don't want to give them any momentum. You don't want to let them drive down the field like West Virginia did, right? On the first drive. You want to shut them down. You want to shut them down hard. And I think a big key to that for me is, like, let's see what they can do with like only five or six guys in the box, right? Like, I want to see them. I don't want to see them have to send the house to try to stop the run or get to the quarterback. I want to see you be able to run your defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying you can't blitz, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to see us have to throw a bunch at this BYU offensive line or this offense to stop it. I want you to have a lot of guys in coverage. That way that those safeties can run free and go up and snag a ball. Right. Like when we've done that, the safeties have been extremely good at when they're able to run free, just go up and grab the ball. So I agree with you. I think that that's a big key. And like you said, shutting down the run. I think that they're, if you can shut down this running back who's got a little confidence, if you can, you know, I mean, really people want to dog on it, but it's like, even against Oklahoma State, you held one of the best running backs in college football, the probably maybe the best running back in college football. And it's like, he only averaged what, like 4 yards a carry. You know, so that's pretty impressive. So I want to see a little bit more of that. But and speaking of run game, over under, would you take 4 yards per carry for BYU in this game overall?
Under, all day.
100%. Like, I would too.
Like the one thing that's been really fun about this team, even though it's, you know, nobody's happy about it, right, about having the two losses. But even in the two losses, this defense held its opponent under its averages. Right. Like they did not let teams bust out well and above their averages at all. So when you think about the fact that they're averaging 3.2 yards a carry on the season, I don't see any way they get to 3 yards a carry unless they somehow, some way just bust like an 85 yard run or a 90 yard run and it just spikes the average up. But I think they'll be under three for me is where I would put them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the big difference we see in this defense compared to, you know, under Alex or even Mike his last few years, I guess a Lincoln Riley defense, is, you know, you had like a death by a thousand cuts and then you'd still get a big run, right? They were running the ball and every time they were getting 5 yards a carry on just base running. And then they'd bust a 50-yarder, so then it looked like, well, you have 9 yards a carry now or something wild. And this team, it feels like the opposite where you stuff them a lot and then you give up a, you know, a 60 yarder. And then all of a sudden the yards per carry looks a little less impressive, I will say, you know, so still got to defend those things. I'm not saying that that is, you know, those aren't valid, but you know what I mean? It's a little bit different. Look, so, but on the other side of the ball, BYU's got a defense, I guess. They are, they're not great either, to be honest with you. They're better than the offense. Statistically, points allowed, they allow 28.7 points. They're tied for 94th in the nation. They're allowing 6 yards per pass attempt, 415 yards per game allowed. They're allowing 5 yards per carry allowed at 7 yards per pass attempt, allowed, which is not good. I don't know if you knew that's not good numbers. So, but, you know, honestly, again, watching their tape, it's the same thing. It's like, it's a really weird team because it's like, I look at this and I'm like, there's guys on this roster that it's like, I wouldn't mind if they were at OU. And one of those guys for me, Ethan Slade, he's sophomore, I believe. He's either freshman or sophomore safety. He's got 59 tackles. He's got an interception. But like, again, one of those guys that he's kind of one of those safeties that doesn't necessarily sometimes get lit up on the stat sheet, but he's always there. Right. So I really like what he's doing. They've got two veteran linebackers. Both of them are seniors, Max Thule. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the other one's name. his first it's AJ. That I don't know. I don't know how to say that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Von Fachon.
You're probably cussing in another language. So let's stop. But yes, him. two veteran linebackers who, like, again, I don't think that they're athletically, I don't think that they're by no means elite. They're not right. athletically that great, but they're very solid. They seem like smart football players. Right. And then they've got a cornerback who has 4 interceptions on the year, Jacob Robinson. I think he's like a sophomore or junior also. They've got some guys out there that can, that you've got to watch for. Like, they're, if you slip up, they're going to be there to make mistakes. So I don't think their D-line's that great, to be honest. But outside of that, I think they're pretty – they've got some playmakers. It's a really weird team. I feel like maybe it's just that transition year for them a little bit. So I think that's why we're seeing some of these weird stats when we're saying, again, the stats don't necessarily tell the whole story here.
Right.
So I don't know, what are your overall, do you have any overall opinions on the BYU defense or?
Not anything that you haven't said. I mean, I don't see anybody athletically that just terrifies me on the tape on that side. You know how this is when you don't watch a team consistently, it's hard to know what things are busts, which things are just just getting outplayed and outmaneuvered. You know, I mean, it's when we watch OU every week and we watch the tape, we kind of know, you start to learn some of the things that are the concepts that OU wants to really major in. So you can kind of see, hey, this guy busted the coverage, right? Or this guy should have done this. It's hard to say with them, but all that to say, I still don't see anybody that I just go, whoa, that guy, like that guy's around, you know? Like we did with Cincinnati, I forgot the safety. I think he was number zero. He was everywhere on the field. Like he just, I mean, is he going to be in the NFL or whatever? I don't know. But every game you watched him in, he showed up somewhere and you went, that dude's got a little juice to him, right? And I just don't see anybody for me that just pops like that on that tape, right? So just go in, play clean, play aggressive, you know, just do those things and you should be able to move the ball on this defense.
Yeah, as I say, the only guy on the list, like I said, I just like the way he plays is Ethan Slade. And he's, like I said, he's a young player. I think if they're going to have success in the future in the Big 12, he's going to have to be a big part of that. He's probably, I think, the best athlete on their team. But even then, I don't think he's elite. But again, he's got that mentality. He's got that kind of a dog of a mentality in him for being a safety. So,
yeah.
But how's are you going to – who's going to be the guy? Give me some guys that you think for OU that you think are going to have a big day to run up the score.
Well, Sawchuk, right? Like, keep that running game rolling, baby. Like, run it right down their throat. With these numbers on their averages on the year, right, for running the ball, things like that. But again, we said that against Kansas. We said that against UCF. Like, those were two of the worst rush defenses in the country. And it felt like trying to run the ball was just suicide. I mean, we just could not get it going. But that's a guy that needs to have a big day to get there. And then, man, I'm going to roll with the dude who just is carrying the squad, Drake. Drake Stoops needs a big day, man. Like, come on out here and go to work and do what you've been doing and keep building to that resume and keep showing your leadership on the field. We know he's a leader, but now just keep showing out on the field so that voice is that much louder.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to give props to Drake, even though he's there because of his dad. Anyway,
okay, Lost Ogle.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't disagree with either of your picks, but I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick Andrew Rain. I've been harping on him all season. I want to see him. I just want to see some effort. I want to see extra effort. It really goes for the whole offensive line because it feels like when you watch the tape of them playing UCF and you know, Oklahoma State, some of those teams, it's like just felt like they were like in Kansas, you know, it's like they just kind of, I think, thought that they were just going to push them around. It was a very weird mentality. There wasn't that mean streak. You go play West Virginia and you saw a little bit of that, right? You saw McCade Matower get a little nasty in the end zone and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I want to see a little bit of that. So I think Rain's got to be the leader to do that and to encourage that. So prove me wrong, Rain. I guess I'm calling you out. Prove me wrong. Tell me I'm an idiot. You can come on the pod and blast me for an hour. I don't care. but that's what I want to see. I want to see the offensive line get nasty. And then, I mean, I think the other guy I want to see is, oh, man. I guess I'm going to go. I got to go somebody different. I'm going to go Jaden Gibson.
The
reason why, I mean, I think there's a number of players, but I've picked Nick so many times. I've picked Farouk even a bunch of times, but Jaden's already shown like he had a great play against West Virginia. There's a good chance there's going to be a lot more rotation in this game. Jaden, show us what you can do. Like when you're out there on the field, I want to see you make some plays. I don't necessarily need to see you put up 200 yards receiving or whatever. I just want to see you make those plays so that we know. Establish yourself as that guy that's going to be one of them dudes next season.
Yep.
I think this is one of those games that he can start to really build that kind of mentality for himself. So, and then just, I guess, what do you think for the offense? What do they need to do? Like you said, overall, what do they need to do to execute? You know, what do you think the key is for them to have a good day? Like what is the, just give me like the one big thing.
I mean, well, the biggest thing is don't turn the ball over. No stupid turnovers in the game, and you should be fine. I think there's a couple things for me. Obviously, that's one, and I even hate saying that because anybody that follows football knows win the turnover battle, you win the game. Lose turnover battle, generally, you lose the game, right? Things for this team that have been a problem. Snaps. If their crowd is into it and lively because they're getting OU and they have an opportunity to beat one of the big boys of the Big 12, Rame can't be snapping the ball all over the place and at the wrong time and to the wrong people and all, like, hang on to the ball, be smart there, be clean there. I think that's big. And then last is from a coaching standpoint, and, you know, you and I have defended him a little bit more than some other people I feel like have, but Jeff Lebby, your goal is this. Whatever you need to throw in the first half, throw the kitchen sink, whatever that is. Then the second half, you can be as conservative as you want to be. But that needs to be your mentality in the game. Your mentality, as a matter of fact, Jeff Lebby's mentality and the staff's mentality needs to be this. How many backups are we going to get multiple series in this game? How much development can we get out of this game? And you don't do that by being like they were against Kansas and SMU, where you're just ultra vanilla and you're not really trying to do anything until you realize you're in a dogfight. And that's the problem with a road game. Look, somebody in Discord even today was like, why are you actively trying to create a reason we're going to lose the game? Well, number one, you can lose this game. Okay, it's possible. But number two, you're on the road. And look, like we've said, you're playing this big bad boy of your conference. Like, we would be no different, right? Like, when Alabama comes to Norman, if we go 3-and-out on the opening drive, you don't think Norman's going to lose its mind? Yeah, it is, right? You think if you go down, you score a touchdown or even a field goal to get a 3-0 lead, you think Norman's going to lose their mind? Yeah. And then if you somehow, some way stop them again on the next drive and it's even 3-0, all of a sudden the crowd, the atmosphere, the players and the coaches start going, guys, we got a shot here. And the longer you let a road environment feel that way, the better off it is. That's why you got in the situation you did in Kansas.
Well, like, I always can't get,
let them hang.
I like, this is one of those games that's weird because I do think, oh, you should dominate, right? Like, when you look at the sheet, right, like when you look at it on paper, they should dominate. I don't argue that. However, if you also look at paper, Texas A&M and Georgia should be undefeated every year, which, right, I mean, Georgia is, but A&M isn't, right? Like, A&M has just fired their coach, but they've had historically record-breaking recruiting class after recruiting class. So, yep. But we still got to, you still got to line up and play the game. Doesn't matter how good you are. Doesn't matter if you're, it's just, I'll use Drake's statement. Doesn't matter if you're 0-8 or you're 8-0. It doesn't.
Right.
Like, you still got to play. So I do agree with you on that.
Well, here's the deal too. Like, we, and you and I have been trying to tell people this. There is talent on this team. This is a good team, and it's a team that's better than it was last year. They're not a team that's so loaded with talent that they can. Arkansas State's about the only game you can walk into and go, we can win this game no matter what we do. After that, any Power 5 school you're playing, you have to come with it, right? Like, you cannot sleepwalk through and just win a game. You have to come prepared and ready with a mentality to play a full game and get through it.
Well, and I think we have to get away from, I think it's a lot of the video game mentality of, well, I've got 99s on my roster and you've got 60s, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter. When BYU, last time BYU and OU met was when Sam Bradford got knocked out for the season, and the whole season basically went down the gutter in the first game, right? And BYU wasn't that good of a team that year. Like, they weren't a world beater. And OU, when you look at that roster and who was on that roster, you're telling me you can go back and look then and say, oh, yeah, BYU should have won that game. Nobody was saying that. Yeah. So, you know, I agree with you. But my key, kind of to go along with you a little bit, maybe a little like parallel to what you're saying, do what you do. Be physical. I want to start seeing this team. I think the hallmark of what was good about a lot of Brent Venables defenses at OU and Clemson was they played the same way whether they were lining up against a bad Kansas team or they were lining up against Texas, right? Like Texas was a little amped, obviously, but it's like week in and week out, you did what you did. You did your business and you played hard, right? Yeah. I don't want to see us come in and go, well, we're better than BYU. We can just, I don't need to ice down after the game. I want to see you go punish people. I want to see it's kind of that true football player mentality of I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And until you stop me, like I'm going to impose my will. Like I've said this so many times this year, literally running your game plan is the most demoralizing thing that you can do to a team. If you're just doing what you do and they can't stop it, there's nothing that makes you see guys put their hands on their hips and just go, I don't know. Like you just see that energy drain from them, from their faces. So I want to see a little bit of that. I want to see a little bit of physicality, a little bit of grit. So, and let's go over under.
Before you go to over under, just one other thought too. And again, we're not crapping on the guy or saying that he's terrible, but DG can't have the first half that he did last week in this game. And let's be honest, his road games, those have kind of been his kryptonite thus far this season. Not that he's played horrendous, right? The Texas game obviously played great, but that's half and half neutral. He did not play great at Cincinnati. He did not play great at Kansas. Now, we both agree that Lebby did not help him play great there either, right? But the road environments have kind of messed with him a little bit. And so go on the road, and you cannot miss a wide open Stogner going down the middle. You cannot miss a wide open Stogner for a touchdown. You cannot miss Drake Stoops for a wide open touchdown. Like, you can't do that in this first half. You need to connect when you get the opportunity.
Well, and real quick before we go to over under, one other note, it's BYU, guys. Their crowd is pretty, it's such a unique atmosphere, I feel like. Every time I've watched a game, I've obviously never been to a game there. But every time I watched a game, it's like a crowd that's way rowdier than you would think for a team that could be 2-10 and they're still in there just going crazy. So, you know, for them not having alcohol, they're pretty wild. Over under 4 yards per carry for OU in this game. What do you think?
You better. Like,
you're taking the over?
You had 5 last week. You better get 5 again this week.
So you're taking the over on that?
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and take the over.
Yeah, I'd take the over too. I think that this is, I want to see Sawchuck, really, really get his feet going, get his confidence up in this game. So,
well, and like we were talking about this earlier, like when you were writing these questions down, my thought was like, am I answering like who's going to have the big day or who needs to have the big day? Because here's the deal. If they finally choose, unless they're redshirting Caleb Hicks, right? And he doesn't play, Smothers could be the, if they play this game the way they should, Smothers could be your leading rusher on the day. Because he's been the first, like, young guy off the bench. And it just needs to be just pounding the rock up the middle with Davis Bevel. That's all it needs to be.
Oh, God, you had to say that name. I'm just glad. You know what? I'm just glad. I'm going to take a shot. I'm just glad that we're putting our backups in, hopefully, because we're dominating and not because we're down 45-3. Anyways.
Yeah.
Moving on. Any other things about the game that you want to get out there, you want to say, like any feelings about the game Saturday?
I mean, no. I mean, we all, like, you know, we put in the Discord the other day, what is there anything that worries you about this game? And it was the early time kickoff and how guys would react to that, right? And, you know, kind of road environment, you know, that those are the things that everybody's a little concerned about.
Hey, one thing that we're talking about, high altitude. You know, it's a high altitude game. So maybe Schmidt can kick a field goal from 30 yards. Anyways.
Wow. What a backhanded blow from you. That's amazing.
Yeah, but it's also just been, let's just move on to, we'll do some college football news before we get into our picks. Because it's been a weird week. Like we just recorded our other pod Monday. And since Monday, so much has transpired, right?
Yeah.
So this week, I think it was either yesterday or Monday, a judge ruled that basically Oregon State and Washington State, who are now the lone members, going to be the lone members of the Pac-12 in 2024, are now the only ones that have chair spots on the Pac-12 committee.
Wow.
Nobody else. No other school. And everybody's been joking. It's like, it'd be pretty hilarious if they somehow like changed the law or changed the ruling or disqualified everybody and said it's going to be Oregon State and Washington State in the Pac-12 championship game. I've seen all these scenarios that I think are pretty hilarious. But it's just
so petty, but I'm here for it.
it's so hilarious to me just because it's like it's such a – I almost feel bad because the Pac-12, after being a joke for, what, a decade, is finally good and it's all falling apart, you know? But again, it's the Pac-12 was the Big 12 just even worse, right, with some of the things that they've done over the last few years. So, but just a weird thing. I was like, it would be kind of hilarious. Like, part of me wants to see it. Part of me is like, let's just not go down that road, you know, whatever. But
this is crazy.
And then the other thing that happened, this is rumor season. We're on the coaching carousel. Now Coach Prime is going to Texas A&M. It's confirmed. Dan Lanning. The number of coaches I've heard names flown around for Texas A&M is absolutely absurd.
Well, and Dan Lanning's response was incredible.
I guess I didn't see the whole thing. I saw like a snippet of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he basically just gave a 4-minute speech of, I am compensated extremely well. And I have a support system that will give me whatever I need to be great. And I have unfinished business. Like, that was basically like a very bullet point synopsis. And it was just like, you guys think you have money? I've got plenty. Like, your money doesn't talk here.
Here's the thing. Dan Lanning to me is you fans are going to hate this. You're going to have to like put this as a subtext in the thing so people can probably roast me on Twitter. We'll get engagement. Dan Lanning is like the Baker Mayfield of coaches.
Yeah.
Very, very chippy, very confident. But also it's like he has that, like, you hate him if he's against you, but you love him if he's your guy.
Yeah.
Like, even when I watch some of his stuff, it's like I watch his stuff and I'm like, dude, that gets me hyped. And I'm not, I hate Oregon, but
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just been wild. I was like, the funny one is I could see Coach Prime because like Colorado is not
splash hire.
Yeah.
All the different things that Texas A&M will want.
And honestly, almost scary if he did do it. It'd be almost scary if he went to A&M because think about it, because if he went, you don't think so?
No. Because look, Texas A&M has the same problem that Texas has had for a decade. It's the alumni thinking that they're something special, right? It's the alumni trying to run everything. Well, you bring in Prime, who wants to be all about look at us. I mean, he is very pizzazz, very show. You're just going to feed into the ego of those alumni guys.
But here's my thing with Prime, and this is a question I guess that you have to – we haven't seen him long enough at Colorado to know how well he can develop, right? Like, he has some guys that are just athletic freaks. Like, Travis Hunter is a dude.
He's so good.
But can he develop? But it's like, if he went to A&M, the scary part would be is if he went to A&M, I think he has the personality and the brand or whatever you want to call it. He could probably keep some of a lot of those top tier recruits in the boat. Mm. And then it's like, it's kind of scary because they have a lot of offensive line and defense. They have a lot of trench guys.
They've got a lot of talent, but again, it's like we've said, like, there's a reason why guys were, you know, smoking weed in a locker room last year, right? There's a reason why guys are jumping ship left and right now. And look, their whole bend is some big booster saying, here's the money we're going to give you to come here because you're amazing. You deserve to play. You're this. You're that, you're this. And it's like, it's the whole thing that we've talked about with OU staff. They build a culture of entitlement rather than empowerment, right? Mm-hmm. And so while I think Dion's a very good coach, and I think he actually does know what he's doing, despite I don't really like his antics and the way he goes about it, he wins that way, but he's never had an alumni base like this, where he wants all the pizzazz and all the recognition and all the little YouTube fanfare stuff and all the jazz, and your boosters want it just as much. Right. And so what does that do to the culture? How do you overcome that? In this is where I will give Steve Sarkisian some credit. Steve Sarkisian has overcome the culture of the alumni guys telling his dudes who they are, what they get to do, what they don't get to do, how great they are, how ungreat they are. And the culture is getting better at Texas, and that's why they've improved so much with him, right?
Well, and the funny thing, I think, is when you look at A&M, the rumors that seem to have the most, I won't say smoke to them, because there's not any smoke right now, right? But that you could see the most plausible, I don't think are culture builder guys. Like, I like Deion, actually, in the sense of, the thing I'll give Deion is he's the same guy all the time. Like, it's not, you know, I mean, he was the guy that he got up there in front of the mic when he got beat and got beat down and said, look, we got our butts kicked. You know, I don't agree with how he handled some of, like, well, we got to get offensive linemen and all that. But at the same time, it's like, he's just that dude. He doesn't, it's just, that's who he is.
What about Dabo?
You think Dabo? I don't think Dabo's going to go.
Did you see his comments?
Yeah, it was very Lincoln Riley-ish, I guess, is how I would say it.
His comment was, I'm just focused on coaching this team right now, which is like the standard coach speak for, I've got games to play. We're not going to talk about that right now. When the season's over and I take the job, then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see it again. I think the problem is, I guess it's not out of the question, right? But at the same time, it's one of those things of the culture has become a bit massive problem at A&M, I think. I think people now, I don't see how anybody can look at Jimbo Fisher and be like, the dude just builds a terrible culture over time, right? But it seems like the I guess the three names I've heard the most or people seem to be pointing at the most is, like you've hinted at on the last pod, Urban Meyer. Mm-hmm. Now I've heard Deion, and now I've heard Dabo. Dabo, I think, can build a good culture. Right. But the other two, it's like, I don't know about Prime. Prime seems to have a little bit of that. And like Urban Meyer, 100%. Like, I was like, Urban Meyer might, it'd be the same thing as it was at Florida or whatever, where it's like, he would have like two or three good seasons. And then it just, he would, oh, I have a heart murmur or whatever.
Right.
So anyway, just a wild time. It's going to be interesting to see how a lot of this plays out in the off season or in the really, maybe even in the coming weeks. But speaking of Deion and Colorado, they're playing Washington State this week. So
we're going to pick them. Pick'ems.
Pick'ems. Colorado at Washington State. The lone member of the Pac-12, one of the lone members of the board. Colorado at Washington. Washington State's favored by 4 points.
Yep.
So who you taking?
Washington State all day. That's a good football team. People are overlooking how good of a football team they are because they are barely a tier below Washington, Oregon, and then they don't have the name recognition of USC. So they're the forgotten team up there in the north, but that's a good football team.
You know what? I'm going to go Colorado.
Oh, there he goes.
I think Colorado, let me put it this way. I'm going to take Colorado at least cover. I think they may end up losing by like 2 or 3 points, but I think if a team, they can beat a team that's good, I think it's Washington State. I do agree with you though. Next one, number 5, Washington at the other lone member of the Pac-12 committee, Oregon State. Oregon State is favored by 2.5 points.
Yeah. Great defense playing at home, but man, I think Washington's really good. I'm going Washington.
Yeah, Washington's been a little bit of a weird team this year, but I'm going to go Washington. I do think, what's his name? Quarterback for Oregon State. I don't know why his name just slipped my mind.
Oh, Uyangale.
Yeah, I think he's really good, but, you know, I think Washington's just got too much talent. Next, we have number 22, Utah at 17, Arizona. Now, by the way, I just snuck up on me. Arizona's 17 in the nation.
I know.
And Arizona's favored by 1. So it's basically pick who's going to win. There's no spread on this one. Utah at Arizona. I guess I'll go first. I'm going to go Utah. I'm going to keep buying Utah because we got the bromance. But they've had a couple of rough weeks. So, but Arizona, hey, turn the season around. A good one. Good one in the SEC country, our future brethren in the SEC. Number 1 Georgia brethren. Facing number 18 Tennessee. Georgia favored by 10. Who are you taking?
Georgia.
Georgia.
All, I mean, them. Give me them dogs.
Yeah, by the way, what is Brock Bowers made out of that the dude's already back? Like, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
Brock Bowers may be the one.
Apparently, he's hanging out with Aaron Rodgers, either medical team or whatever dark retreats in the offseason, because both those guys seem to be way ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I'm a big Brock Bowers fan. Next, we got, speaking of Dabo, we got number 20 to North Carolina at Clemson. Clemson's fighting for their life a little bit, but North Carolina, number 20 in the nation. Clemson's, though, favored by 6.5 points. It is at home for Clemson, so who you taking?
I am taking North Carolina. I think at least they will cover. I don't know that they'll win, but I think they at least cover. I haven't seen enough from Clemson to think that they're just
going
to pull that out.
I didn't even realize until I looked at the stats. I was looking for Ollie Gordon stats or whatever. The UNC running back is the number two rusher in the nation.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, he's like 1,207 yards. Yeah.
That's a good stat.
But I'm going to go Clemson.
Ooh, even with all the distraction now of Dabo going to A&M.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Clemson's, I think they're starting to figure a few things out. I don't still think they're a great team, but yeah. Next up, we have little brother at Houston. Now, this has got, we're getting into the big implication stages of the Big 12. Oklahoma State, number 23, Oklahoma State, which was kind of wild that they're still ranked after getting bodied by UCF. But 23, Oklahoma State at Houston, Oklahoma State's favored by 7. Who are you taking?
I'm going to take Oklahoma State. I want Houston to win this game so bad. And I want them to beat them down so bad. But, I mean, dude, Houston's bad. They're real bad.
But you say that. And I don't disagree with you. But it's like Houston is that same team as like a BYU where it's like they've played way above their measure and way below their measure. I feel like. Like they played, they should have beat Texas. They honestly should have beat Texas. Think about that.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm going to go Houston. Support my hometown, I guess, or my birth town, Houston. I'm going to go Houston. You picked OSU, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I'm going to go Houston. I don't know that they'll win, but I think they'll cover. I think it's going to be a tighter game. I think Houston may be a little bit better than what people think, but I do agree with you. They're not a great team, but yeah, I don't know that. Still not a Mike Gundy fan. I don't know that he's a great coach, to be honest with you. So maybe that's what's starting to happen. Next up, 7. We're doing a lot of pickems this week, so we're going through pretty quick. 7, Texas at Iowa State. Iowa State's already throwing a little bit of smoke in there. They're already throwing some shade around. But number 7, Texas is favored by 7.5 points at Iowa State. Who you taking? Also, big implications if Texas loses this game.
Oh, huge implication. Well, number one, I was totally on the Iowa State to cover train until their own dude started opening his mouth up and talking all kinds of smack about how they were going to push Texas around all day. I do not think that helps their cause at all. I want Iowa State to pull it out, but I think they got a little extra motivation because of all that. So I'm going to take Texas.
I'm going to go Iowa State. I know Ewers is back. I still don't. And let me ask this real quick before we roll on to the next one. Do you think Ewers, one, is coming back next year? And two, do you think he's like this world beater that everybody at Texas seems to think he is?
No, I think he's a very solid quarterback. I don't think he's anything special. I'm not shocked he's coming back. I mean, he's been hurt 2 years in a row, same kind of injury, not a massive hit that he's taken to have his shoulder all bummed up. And he has looked fantastic 2 years in a row. He has looked great 2 years in a row against Alabama. And he has looked average at best against everybody else. I think he needs another year. Doesn't shock me at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go ISU. But yeah, that's my, I probably don't disagree with that. I think he's a little overrated compared to what Texas fans say. And last one before we go to the OU picks, UCLA at USC. USC's favored by 6.5. Do you think, let me ask you this way, do you think Lincoln Riley is going to have players at the press conference?
Yes, he'll have players at the press conference because they're forcing him to do it, but UCLA covers.
Okay, I'm going to go UCLA to win outright.
Woo!
I mean, I think Kelly's got he's an offensive guy. That defense is looking as lost as ever. I mean, they did play a little bit better as that last game went on, but yeah, I just think that they're win. And then, of course, the last one of the day, the one and only, number 14, Oklahoma at BYU. Oklahoma's favored by 24.5 points.
Yeah.
Who are you taking?
I'm taking BYU to cover, believe it or not. So.
Okay. I'm going to go Oklahoma. I'm going to pick us to cover. I think it's going to be worse than the West Virginia game for them. So,
I would love it.
What do you, like, give me your score prediction real quick. What do you got your score for?
I've got my score prediction right now at, I think I got it at 34-10. That's where I've got it.
Okay. You're not going to like mine then probably. I'm going to go 52-6.
Absolutely a possibility.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that's pretty much, we think we've covered most of it. We've been pretty thorough. What are your thoughts on, looks like we can talk a little bit of Thunder, because they just, do you want to call it a beat down
on this? When you win by 30 whatever points, yeah, it's a beat down. And by the way, it was only, I think it was a 9 or 10 point game at half. So they blew it open in the second half, and Chet Holmgren may have had his worst game of the entire season, and you still blew them out. I mean, that's as good as you can hope for. Great win.
I want to ask this because this is, again, where I'd really love for Troy. We've got to get Troy on a Thunder pod as we get deeper into the season, because it's like, I feel like everybody's talking about how Wembanyama has just arrived, and he's just exactly like, I've heard so much still hyperbole about him. And then but I hear so many more people that I talk to be like, well, Chet needs like another year or two. And I'm like, I know San Antonio overall as a team is way worse than Oklahoma City.
Right.
But personally right now, I don't think Wembanyama has lived up to the expectation quite what he should have. Don't get me wrong, he's phenomenal. Right. But I don't think he's like, is going to be as good as Jordan or LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Jordan LeBron phase yet, but he had a bad stretch against Oklahoma City last night, but man, you go back to a couple of those games before that, and I mean, dude was torching people, and, you know, again, just we've never seen anything like him. That's what's going to be interesting, and I think that's where you do get some LeBron comparison, right, is not, I don't think that anyone thinks his skill is quite that good per se, but LeBron was the same. We had never seen a power forward play like LeBron did, a guy built like that, you know, be able to play the game like that. And that's Wimby. We've not seen 7'4" dribble, pass, shoot like he does.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. It is funny because we were talking about that the other day. LeBron's like 38 years old. Yeah. And dude, like, he still has moments where he just absolutely dominates people. Like, look, yes. I'm going to be honest. I'm not the biggest LeBron fan. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't hate the guy. I don't, you know, as far as just a person, he's not my favorite. But as a player, we had this whole conversation at the UCF game. And it's like, I always hate the Jordan versus LeBron. Cause I'm like, you're comparing, it'd be like comparing Sam Bradford to Adrian Peterson. Like, it's two different things. I understand basketball is a different sport. There's less players, all that sort of thing. But it's such a dumb comparison to me. But you can't argue when you watch LeBron at 38 years old. I don't remember what game it was I was watching where it's like, dude, he literally just a much younger player, he just shook and then went and just nearly broke the backboard at 38 yeah. years old. So, and it's funny, we were talking about that. Another thing we talked about, it was maybe Bron is probably going to be on whatever roster LeBron's on. Like we were talking about it, and I was like, really, when you think about it, well, think about it. If LeBron, let's say baby Bron is just really, really good, right? Let's say he just dominates in college and he's a top pick. LeBron's probably going to find a way to get on that roster, right?
Maybe.
I think he wants to play with his kid. And I think that he'll do that. But if it like, let's say baby Bron isn't that good in college, then he still comes out. And I think whatever team LeBron's at, be that the Lakers or wherever, they're going to probably draft him or get him on the roster. So it'll be interesting to see next year. But I think Bron's probably got another, I think he's probably going to play for another 2 or 3 years and then he'll
I mean, he definitely looks like he can, which is insane.
Yeah. I mean, people have been talking about for 6 years. I feel like when he got to his
Let me rephrase that. He can definitely play 2 to 3 more years, but I think we're all anticipating him to keep playing at LeBron levels for 2 and maybe 3 more years, right? Before he starts to break down. And at that point, he might just walk away, which is crazy.
Yeah. I was going to say you can't argue, but yeah, it's a fun time in the NBA. There's so much talent. Like when you look at it from top to bottom, the NBA has to be as talented or full of talent as it's ever been.
Yeah. Right.
Like I still contend that it was more fun watching. Maybe it's because I was young. I was very young, but watching Jordan and those sorts of teams, Jordan and Pippen and Rodman and all those teams versus whoever, Stockton and Malone, all that. But geez, the NBA is so good right now. So yeah, a lot of good things. The Thunder's one of those teams. So they got a lot of,
and they are on pace for 50 plus wins right now. That's what's crazy. They are on pace for 50 plus wins. They are 7-4. They are on pace for 50 plus wins. Which, by the way, did you see the Draymond?
I did not, I guess.
There was a altercation. Rudy Gobert goes in to pull Klay Thompson out of the scrum. And as he starts to pull Klay Thompson out of the scrum, Draymond Green comes and grabs Rudy Gobert around the throat and drags him halfway across the court in a chokehold.
Okay. Yeah.
Lots of calls for long suspension for Draymond Green because of his constant antics. How do you respond without seeing, I guess, the clip is probably the big thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't have to necessarily see the clip because it's Draymond, but yeah, I mean, excuse me.
Bless you.
Oh, the Just Okay Sports podcast here.
And this is official just like an hour ago. Warriors Draymond Green suspended 5 games for altercation against the T-Wolves. So they did suspend him for 5 games.
Yeah, I mean, that dude, man. There was actually, I don't know if you saw, this is maybe get a little dark. The guy that got killed in a UK hockey game. Did you see all that?
I heard about it. Yeah, I heard about it. My son actually told me about it.
Dude, there was a video and the videos, don't watch the video. But yeah, terrible accident. Well, I do think it was an accident. Even they charged the guy that did it with manslaughter this week and arrested him.
Wow.
But I found out that guy has been in I think it was either, I saw a stat that was he's been in 6 or 7 hockey leagues around the world and has gotten kicked out of a lot of them for dirty hits and things of that nature. And if you watch the video, it's like there's no way that he's not doing that trying to hurt somebody. I don't think he tried to kill the guy. But like what he's doing makes zero sense to be a good play. And I'm not even a hockey expert. You just watch it. It's like that physically doesn't make sense. So yeah, just a weird thing. You gotta start nipping that stuff in the bud. You know what I mean? Like you have to.
Yeah.
Draymond's been getting away with it far too long, in my opinion.
I would completely agree with that. Do not deny that for 1 second. The way he treats referees, the way that he is on the court and all the different little moments that have happened where people have either been hurt or nearly hurt because of that. Is just, it's not acceptable. And I'm actually sending you the videos right now just so you can see why he got suspended. Troy and I were talking about it earlier today. Gobert definitely kind of acts it up towards the end, but either way, you put someone literally in a chokehold with your arms wrapped around his throat, not like under his arms or anything else, but literally around his throat, and you're dragging him across the court for a long ways. Even if you thought Rudy Gobert was trying to fight Klay Thompson and you're defending him, that's over the top. Grab him, throw him to the ground, pull him off, shove him, throw a punch. But choking someone for that long is pretty intense.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those, there's a fine line between defending your guy. Like, I can respect that. Like, you know, Steven Adams would be a guy that would defend somebody.
McCade Matower last week, going after number 12.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. He's one of those guys. Go up and get in somebody's face, whatever. Like, I get that. But like, having your teammates back, that's a fundamental of why we all love sports, right? Is the camaraderie and the brotherhood of it. Or that's why we play. And so I understand that, but dude, there's a limit. Like, you don't, that's way too far. Yeah. I just watched the clip. That's horrible. So yeah, I don't like that guy at all. but yeah.
Hey, the good thing is the positive is we will not see him. We play Golden State for 2 games in that stretch of the 5-game suspension. So that'll be nice.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I'm excited. We're getting close. It's always fun because I feel like things start to heat up around the Thanksgiving games and stuff, like when we get to the holiday games and stuff. So I'm hyped for, I know that's a dumb thing to be hyped for Thanksgiving, but I'm pretty hyped for it. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I'm ready for this weekend. I'm ready for some OU football, ready for the Vegas F1 race.
Yep.
Apparently the tickets have dropped in price dramatically over the last week.
I saw an article, but I didn't, or not an article. I saw somebody on Twitter saying, like, basically Vegas was trying to give away tickets and trying to give away rooms because no one's booking. And I'm like, I just don't know that I believe that.
Here's my take on that as somebody that used to work in that industry. What probably happened is the F1 is trying its best to promote, and they're the best way for them to promote their inaugural season is to be as buddy buddy with all the casinos and resorts that they can be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if they come and say, well, we want 5,000 tickets for the race, the F1 probably was like, yeah, sure, here you go, right? Now, a lot of those teams, like those marketing teams, they probably were like, they hold on to a lot of them, and that's just the nature of it. And then now it's last minute. And, you know, they try to give them to Wales or people trying to get people to come to Vegas. And like they just have a surplus, right? It happens. Like, that's just part of the industry. I think that's just the uniqueness of it being Vegas and how that industry operates more than it is F1. And then also, it's kind of funny, though. I also just don't think that the race itself, I don't think will be that good. Because it's like, it's basically two long straights. Like, it's a very, there's not many corners, which is what you need. You need some corners. Like, it's, F1's just such a weird, unique sport, but it's like, it's going to be Red Bull drive off into the sunset and everybody else is just going to be in a train behind them. but yeah, I do still want to go 1 year. So like I said, maybe it's going to be there for 10 years minimum. So maybe for like my 40th or something, we can go to the F1 race. But yeah, it's just a lot of good stuff. Like we're getting, like I said, we're getting back into that. This is like my favorite time of year. We got basketball. F1's got only 2 races left, which is sad, but basketball, football, NFL, we're going into the play. We're getting closer to the playoffs where, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much happening right now. It's such a good, guess what? When we get to the end of that, we got softball coming. So, so much to look forward to.
It's awesome. It's a great, great time. So, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
I do not, sir.
There we go. So Well, folks, again, if you've liked it, please like, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment. We would be so grateful, especially subscribe at YouTube and at Spotify. That would help us out so much. And we would really, really appreciate it. So again, if you like what you're hearing here, we are not insiders. There is no paywall. There is no fee for subscriptions. It is simply just guys talking football, and we're having a great time. We hope you are too. I'm Daryl. That's Jared. And we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, a Thunder money ball.
You can unhitch the wagon. Put the ponies in the ball.